Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks.
Oh, I needed that. What tea is this, Darren?
It's something from Waitrose. It's called Jasmine Rose Green Tea.
I love it.
Yeah?
Yes.
Can I smell it?
Oh, I can smell the rose.
It's gorgeous, isn't it? And the tea, the you can see the petals in the...
Yeah. I'm guessing it's petals. I hope so, anyway. There you go. No, I'm...
How are you? You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm not drinking that because it's the evening and I won't be able to sleep. I know there's only a little bit of caffeine in it, but it's still enough. So I'm on the hot water. I know, but I like that after dinner, after a nice roast.
No, big fat belly now.
Big fat, bloated like anything. Well. Oh my God, yeah. Just as well we're not seeing a show, because I probably would have been falling asleep, yeah. I know.
Been a busy week. I took, I think that's why I'm a bit exhausted actually. I took 150 people to another big event to see Mrs. Doubtfire.
Again?
I know. So I saw it back in July, twice within a fortnight. Had the press night and some lovely tickets courtesy of the school trip, and then this was the opportunity to take the whole of year eight, and they loved it. They really loved it. They wanted to do a standing ovation, but they weren't sure whether they could stand up or not.
Why not?
I don't know. They all looked really hesitant. I was like, well behaved, but I would have been happy for them to stand up.
Oh,
but yeah, but they loved it, and. You know, I did an interview back in, goodness me, it was back in July, so Series 3, Episode 17, with Sam Wilson Freeman, ex-pupil of mine. He was ensemble in Oscar Wilde. And Laura Tebbutt, who plays Miranda, Daniel's wife. And Kelly Agbu, who plays Wanda. And Daniel was played by Gabriel Vick, and he was fantastic, as he has been every performance that I've seen. It's an incredible role to play, and he has so many costume changes
and voices as well, isn't it? Different accents and things,
and changes on stage, changes in the wings. It's really incredible, and I think it's brilliant, the choreography, everything. I mean, I've reviewed it twice now, so I'm not going to go into detail, but I think they're booking now until 2025.
Oh wow,
I know,
brilliant.
Yeah, so it's got longevity defo. And it's a great show. And the message at the end, it got me this time again. A little tear. Mm. Yeah.
Okay.
A little tear. And then the lights come up and you're
like... Especially with your children there,
students,
yeah.
Off we go.
That's it. Yeah, I can't believe I still haven't seen it. It is definitely obviously on the list. It's one of those shows that you just think, oh, it's going to be on for a while. And then it'll be the last week and go, oh my God, I've got to see it quickly. But yeah, I get around to it.
I was like, Tina, I finally have got tickets. I'm looking forward to seeing this before the end of... January, early February.
Yeah.
A couple of weeks, so I can't wait. Especially after the brilliant review.
Oh, okay, Tina musical was great.
The music as well.
Yeah, Tina Turner the musical is definitely one to see, especially if you like the music and the story itself. I mean, not going to talk about it now, we've already reviewed it anyway in the previous podcast. Actually, one of the first ones of the year, season three, last year actually. It's very good. You know, if you love Tina Turner songs and you like her story... Ultimately, it's her story, her life story played out on stage from when she was a little girl right through until she became the star that she was born to be. Really.
And I love her. You know, an artist's rise to fame, documentary and or docufilm or film or musical theatre. Just love it. That's my favourite kind of show, I think, definitely, over the years. I actually met someone the other day who works on the show as, I think she's DSM, company manager. She's got a company called Backstage Niche, and they supply DSMs and stage managers. And it was on a teacher's course at the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton.
Oh,
and I did workshops with Trestle Theatre, Paper Birds, Backstage Niche, the RSC, and actually a guy from my old drama school from DSL, and he was doing something on how to help your students do their his self-tape for the first round of auditions. So that was really interesting, actually. So I learned quite a lot.
Oh.
So, that's good.
Might actually do a workshop for self-tape, how not to self-tape.
Mm.
But we'll talk about that one another time. No, it's interesting you're just saying about Tina. So the next show we're going to talk about is Cruel Intentions, the musical, and I loved it. I was there press night. And I saw it at Edinburgh in 2018.
Wow.
No, 2019. Sorry, 2019. It's the year before the pandemic, so 2019. And I loved it then, but that was like a 70-minute straight-through kind of piece. Now it's a proper two-hour interval, full-length, wow, properly fleshed-out show. The reason I'm saying it from now from Tina is Rhianne Louise Mikorski, who is absolutely brilliant in the lead role of Catherine, she was Aline Bullock in and first cover Tina in Tina the Musical. Oh. So that's So wow. I sadly didn't get to see her in that show because I don't think she was in it than I was there actually. But she was also one of the queens from Six. So she's
one of those.
But she was amazing, like absolutely beautiful stage, amazing voice. Incredibly charismatic, and to play the role of Catherine, you have to be all those qualities because the story is obviously it's based on the film, but ultimately the film is based on the book originally, or even the other movie of Dangerous Liaisons. Mm. So it's a lot of stuff's going on, a lot of layers for this character because this character is incredibly like she's wicked. But there's a wickedness that comes from a vulnerability. You know, there's all the emotional levels and stuff. So she wasn't like born wicked, born horrible. She kind of circumstanced, And she does it to protect herself. And so she becomes like an empowered bully in some respects that everyone looks onto. And obviously tables turn near the end and things don't go so well for her. But, you know, not to ruin it for anyone, especially for yourself, you want to go and see it. But it's so well done. But the thing is, you know, all the music, it's jukebox musical.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's the songs from Britney Spears, Boys to Men, Ace of Base, Natalie Imbruglia, you know, like NSYNC, TLC. There's a brilliant comedic moment with TLC, those scrubs.
Oh, brilliant.
It's just brilliant. I'm not going to ruin it for people listening. They have to go and see it for themselves. But ultimately, all the cast is phenomenal. Like Daniel Bravo, who plays Sebastian, again, great chemistry against Rhianne playing Catherine. Cecile, played by Rose Galbraith, again, brilliant fun. Abby Budden played Annette. I mean, like even the kind of like camp gay character Josh Barnett played playing Blaine. It's so much fun, like the chemistry there between the whole company, you know, it was
a young company. It looks.
Young company. Yeah. I mean, they're supposed to be at high school. So it is that kind of high school thing. Very, very much in the guise of, say, Heathers. Mm-hmm. Similar kind of like themes, I guess, with the guise of the whole power, hungriness. No, set in America. Yeah. In a public school. Mm. Well, the private school there, but yeah. Here, private school. Yeah, we call it private schools. They call it public schools.
Private schools here are also called public schools, which makes it really confusing.
Oh,
state school is a non-fee paying school.
Yeah. Oh, okay, yeah.
Well, and this is on the other palace.
Yeah, this is the other palace. So Jonathan O'Boyle, friend, is directing it, and Gary Lloyd did the choreography. And the choreography is really cool. It's very much of the kind of like the era of the songs, and also quite very teenage fun choreography. You know, it just works so well. Again, the costume design, set costume by Poddy Sullivan, really spot on. The way they changed scenes was very simplistic. It wasn't overly fussy set, which is good because it was all about the performances. They had a revolve, so things were moving around quite well. The scenes between like the living space to the high school, all that kind of stuff, again, seamless. You were really caught in the moment of where they actually were. Brilliant lighting design with Nick Richings. Sound design was obviously spot on, and the songs, I mean, from when I saw it in Edinburgh, they'd obviously, like I said, built on it, and they'd added more songs and stuff like that. Completely different cast. Again, it was 4 years ago and people move on and stuff, but really strong. I couldn't fault any of the performances at all. I mean, yeah, for a press night as well, where obviously some of the tension and things are high, and you know, it was faultless.
Flawless.
Flawless. I wasn't a flawless. Yeah. faultless, everything in between.
Well,
but
I
no,
need
I really
to
enjoyed
this. Then
you definitely need to see it, and I'm going to see it again.
I forgot. Did you say?
Oh, until April. So basically, yeah, it's until the 14th of April.
Just whiz by,
it will whiz by, and I think he's got life after. I mean, it's. I don't know. It's would it make it into a bigger West End theatre? Possibly, I think. You know, it's the music. You know all the songs. Yeah. I mean, that's the thing about jukebox
musicals. Yeah, that's what. Yeah, it gets a different crowd in as well a little bit, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And the story itself is really strong. Mm. The way it's told is really strong. Yeah, like I said, the staging and stuff. It really served the piece. It wasn't overly fussy. It wasn't minimalistic. It wasn't a Jamie Lloyd. It just worked in the space. They'd really thought about where they were, what they're doing, and how they wanted to achieve it. So it was really, really well done. There's plenty I could say about it.
It's a lot of space at the Palace as well, isn't it?
It is, and it works for certain shows. Yeah. I mean, certain things I've seen there, but maybe it was the show rather than the venue. But I think like this one, it serves it well. It works great in the space because it's not too big. And you are focusing on what's got on the action on the stage. And like I said, the performances are really strong. So you're really kind of engaged in what's going on. And you kind of, even though Catherine is a baddie, you kind of rooting for her until she goes too far.
Right.
And then it's like, oh, come on. Yeah, that's not very good. And it all kind of flips around for her and stuff like that. But yeah, it's
good.
Yeah, I mean, Verity Thompson, great comic timing, the stuff she did.
Yeah, good. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm sold. That's going to go on my list.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, hopefully the reviews are going to be really positive on it. It's an interesting thing, actually, when you're going to press like, because you kind of get to see familiar faces who are the reviewers on the nationals and other bloggers and stuff like that. And you start talking to people. So you start talking to them in a professional sense. So there was a certain critic in one of the bigger press, I won't say names, and he absolutely hated it at Edinburgh. And I said to him, well, why have you come again? Like, if you didn't like it, surely someone else in your publication...
Was he hoping that it's evolved?
Yeah, that's what he wanted to see, if it had evolved and got back. So he was on the same row as me. So every so often I kept looking over at him. And you can see in moments he was enjoying himself. And in moments, like, you know when people were clapping, they get really big. I'd have a little look. But
curious.
Yeah. And he would be like just tapping his notebook. Instead of clapping type thing, you know, it's like, oh, come on. And that kind of, I wouldn't say annoyed me, but I just thought, if you hated something so much, why would you come again? I mean, if you hate something, it's never going to be from a 0 to a 5-star show for you. It can't, surely, because it's exactly the same story, different actors playing the same characters. Yeah. And, you know, most of the music was the same. They've added some songs. So thinking, how different do you think it's going to be? So surely it would be more fair for the show for them to send someone who had never seen it before and is more likely to engage in these kind of shows. You know, it's very interesting.
Curious to see.
So I'll tell you offline, but I was not going to tell you online. Yes. I mean, I'd love to say here it is, actually, but I'm not going to do that.
What are we discussing next, then?
Well, next is a... I don't know why I laughed at the name, but it's called Cock Fosters. Yeah, funny that. Yeah, and it's about the trains. Yeah, it's a place in London. It's on the end of the Piccadilly line. And it's ultimately, it's 70-minute, straight through comedy that's done the rounds last year, done really well. It's very short spurts. Mm-hmm. Started at the Drayton Arms, and then it moved to the Turbine Theatre for like a few performances. And now it did a 2-week sold out run at the Turbine. It's just closed, and hopefully it would go on and do some more wonderful stuff. It's a really fun show, very comedy, about two people that meet on the Piccadilly line at Heathrow, and they get off at the end at Cogfosters. And it's all the things that happen in between. So you got the busker on the tube, you got the annoying American tourists. I mean, a little bit kind of stereotypical there going on there. You've got the homeless person, you've got like the school kid, and
let's say the Londoner.
Absolutely. So if you sit on the tube, it's all these things that happen to you. Oh, it's the guy who runs into his old school friend who's incredibly annoying. So it's, you know, it's the kind of thing you would probably expect if you spent the whole time from one end of the Piccadilly line to the very end. Maybe we should try that. Maybe just get the tube to Heathrow and then go all the way to the end.
I feel like that night when I was at Wembley after a concert and then went to the wrong station. And then the Jubilee line wasn't running and then had to walk the other way and then ended up at Baker Street and then ended up... I did the whole line and then ended up getting an Uber from Hammersmith. So I kind of have done that. That was quite an eventful journey. I could have turned that into a play.
Yeah.
It's been done now, though.
Yeah.
Off the rails, hit comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. Cockfosters. Yeah. It was really fun. Yeah. So hopefully he's got a life after that. It's written by a kind of newbie playwright, Tom Orphandon and Hamish Clayton, and who also directed it. But yeah, some great design work. I mean, very basic, simplistic design work from Gareth Rowntree, but it lent itself again to the space. Tom was telling me, because I met him before the show, that it's they'd bought, for the original run, they had hired underground kind of seating, mm-hmm. the chairs to look like.
Yeah.
And then they decided to buy them. So they bought their own set. So I said, well, stick it on some wheels and then it'd become a little touring show for you. So yeah, so they got the old fashioned kind of like blue fabric kind of things. And that's pretty much it for the set, other than lots of props from the different characters coming in and some lighting that signifies the doors opening, closing and stuff. And the sounds of the tube. And what's really interesting as well, because it's underneath it's in the railway arches underneath the lines that run from South London into Victoria.
Yeah.
You've got the trains going over.
Nice.
So you kind of get the feeling that you're in the kind of like station, other trains going past and stuff like that. So it's almost like sound effects, but they're kind of like
there. Was it years ago? I saw something at the Vaults. It was a verbatim play, and it was about the train crash, the derailment.
Oh, Clapham Junction.
Yeah, and that was underneath the arches. So you got the sound of the underground as well. It was quite interesting, quite harrowing as well.
Yeah, it would have been from that thing. Yeah, yeah. It was. It's nice to see a comedy. It was a matinee. For me, obviously, but I do like the Turnmark Theatre. They do some terrific work, especially for new writing, and it's run by Paul Taylor Mills, and he does champion new people. For instance, Rob, you know, I'm a queer, my son's a queer,
yeah,
you know, exactly that kind of thing, absolutely. Okay. And there's a lot of
Broadway.
But the programming, you know, is they kind of empower new writing and tryouts and stuff. You can do stuff there for two or three performances and things. So. You know, they do. He's very good about helping people starting on their careers.
It's an area to go to, isn't it?
Station. It's very busy. Yeah, big shopping mall there.
Label, stuff. You know, busier than it was, you know, a few years back. It's good.
Yeah.
Lots to do,
yeah. But it is a shame there isn't a bigger theatre scene there. Mm. You know, you've got a big shopping mall and stuff. You've got two cinemas. You've got the smaller, like, kind of fringy venue of Turnmark Theatre.
Space.
They could have done something terrific for the theatre scene there, or even for the live music scene, any of that kind of stuff, really.
Something catered for both, yeah, concerts, music.
Yeah, a versatile space that can do many things. So that's a bit of a shame. You know, the planners, all they want is make as much money as they can, you know, sort the arts type thing. But it's like, yeah.
Shops and restaurants.
It's a shame. Yes, it. Shops and restaurants brings in the punters. But then shops and restaurants, they have their thing. But if you're coming, you might want to go see a show. You want to see some entertainment. You know, it's high school, but it's gone now. I mean, obviously, Christmas and stuff, we'll be fine. But hopefully,
indoor golf as well.
Have they?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. But there doesn't seem to be much entertainment stuff there as I was looking around. But they have got the, like, the pier in the front. They have the live stuff there.
10 days. It's not bad. It's like paddleboard or something. They've got, like, courts out the front of it as well. That's quite interesting. I don't know what it's called. But it's like a bigger bat, but with a shorter handle.
Oof.
Don't know. And a net. It's like just another racket sport, but yeah, they've got that out there. So there's a couple of things, but it's a bit more summer, and they show things like Wimbledon tennis when the tennis is on and stuff. They'll have a big screen or World Cup, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so, big screen sports.
Yeah,
rolled in the summer.
So Cockfosters finished now.
It's finished now. It's only short run, but it will probably come again, whether it be at the Turbine or somewhere else. I was talking to him about other venues and stuff. I mean, it is, I'm saying niche show as such, but it is. I said. Very much an Edinburgh Fringe kind of Vaults kind of show. It could go elsewhere in London. It could even do some of the regions in some respects. It could even do something off Broadway if they really wanted to push it off there, because the whole theme is London.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, the foreigners do like a thing in London. There's also telling me that all the people from TFL that have come to see it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it is ultimately about... No. Well, maybe it's going to be... But it was pretty expensive. It's like £20, so £15, yeah. £20. But Tom told me that one of the actors, I don't know which one it was now, who played the, when you work on the underground, what are they called? People that work on the underground. Not the driver, like the
underground official.
Yeah, that's it. There you go. And he was recognised apparently at a station from a TfL person.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw you in the show.
About my job. Yeah. There you go. Yeah.
Oh,
something. Yeah.
That's nice.
Listen. Yeah, it's cute. But as you can see in the production shot, see the old seating and stuff like that. Yeah. Mm. It works really well. But yeah, definitely one of those shows that could work well on The Fringe. Absolutely. Because you just pick it up, move it on.
Yeah.
Next one. We love with that. Absolutely.
Good.
Yeah. Yes.
Next
is you went and saw the tour of Jamie.
Yes. So after my lovely workshops, Mayflower Theatre, the lovely people at Mayflower Theatre gave me a ticket to go and see Everyone's Talking About Jamie. Now, I saw this years ago now. I think this was pre-podcast, not sure. But yeah, I saw Leighton Williams when he was in
the... He was second round.
Yeah, so I saw him originally. Yeah, so that was 2021, and then he went off on the UK tour, didn't he, in Los Angeles. So this is the new UK tour, which I think is wrapping up in London, Sadler's Wells. So there's a chance for people in London to see it as well.
It's going to Sadler's Wells?
Yeah.
A musical, rather.
Oh, yeah, it's Sadler's coming Wells. In Sadler's Wells.
Okay.
Because I saw when I went to see Edward Scissorhands, I saw posters of it. Yeah. I'm not sure when, but it is coming there. So it was lovely to see the show. I actually saw the understudy on the night that I was there, Fintan Flynn, the cover for Jamie. So I think Ivano Turco was unwell or couldn't do the show that night. I think it was his first full run of the show. Everyone gave him a standing ovation at the end and kind of whooped him. He was a bit tearful at the end, so he stuck his head back out round the stage. I thought he did a good job, but having seen Leighton Williams, who I adore and think is phenomenal in that role, and whom I prefer in the role to, I can't remember the name of the actor who did the film, I think he's incredible. And so it was always going to be a hard ask to get anywhere near that. But I think he did a great job under the circumstances, and a big shout out to all the Swings understudies, ensemble actors. You know, I just think they do an amazing job. But yeah, it was great. I mean, it didn't have the same impact for me that it did the first time. I was sat really close in the stalls the first time I saw it, and this was sort of back of the stalls. Mayflower Theatre is a big house. It's quite wide as well, so it works, but obviously it's a receiving house, so some shows I think work better than others. The thing about the Jamie set is it's a bit like, you know, the house of Bernarda Alba. It's quite upright, it's layers, the band are behind that. It's quite a sort of rectangular solid, but that was on kind of a wider stage, I don't know. So just obviously it's on tour and it's going to fit better in different theatres as you go around the country. But yeah, the actress Rebecca McInnes, who plays Margaret, his mum, was outstanding on the big number, He's My Boy, which always gets me emotionally because it's just, you know, I'm a mother of a teenager. And then John Partridge was brilliant as the... Loco Chanel, the owner of the drag shop. But yeah, I mean, it's for those people that don't know, it's a musical centered around the coming of age. It's scored by Dan Gillespie, sells and book and lyrics by Tom McRae. And it's inspired by, there was a 2011 British TV documentary called Jamie, Drag Queen at 16. And that was directed by Jenny Popplewell. And yeah, it's the story about the 16-year-old British schoolboy, Jamie Campbell, as he overcomes prejudice and bullying in a school and steps out of the darkness to become a drag queen. One thing that I did notice, it's quite interesting, seeing as I was sat with a whole bunch of drama teachers watching it, and seeing as when I saw it a few years ago, times have really changed. And I think for me, something that really grated on me this time, which didn't before, and this is because if you think it is based on a story from 2011, if you think about how times have changed in terms of gender and how that's viewed and how actually open we are to things in schools now, just the way that the teacher, and it was odd, it's like, who is this teacher? At one point, she's like the careers officer. The next point, she's bringing people into the office to talk to parents as if she's a head of year, like pastoral or deputy head. There's like one teacher and she does all of She like runs the entire school. It's very odd. And the way in which she talks to Jamie and the parents about him not having a skirt, you know, like literally last year at my sick form leavers do, one of my favourite students, who I know shouldn't have favourites, but he has gone off to do makeup at London College of Fashion. We had a great photo taken at the end of the leavers ball, and he was wearing a full-on beautiful ball gown skirt. It's totally acceptable in this day and age. So it is quite hard to sit and watch something. But obviously it's set a few years ago. But it's just for me, as an educator, as someone who's in schools, knowing how far schools have come in terms of uniform policies and what we allow and don't allow, it's fine as a historic piece now, but I think it needs to move with the times a little bit. But then if we move with the times, where's the struggle of him? You know, it's the acceptance of his peers is the storyline, and he overcomes it and they all stand up for him. And, you know, I don't want to give the end of the story away for people, but I don't know, there's just little things there policy wise that grate on me slightly, but the songs, the choreography, the ideas, it's all there. But maybe that's why I just didn't enjoy it as much this time. And there were moments where the teachers, we all looked at each other and went, oh, it's awkward. You wouldn't speak to a student like that. It was very, we don't talk to students like that. We don't tell kids to shut up. You know, there's just little things that bugged me from a teacher perspective.
But maybe they need to go back into the classroom with the piece and update it. Because
I think so. I think they need a panel of you know, of teachers.
Yeah.
Definitely.
I mean, it's not, I don't know if it's a period piece, but why should it be a period piece? Because otherwise they have to then put it in that period. And
yeah, it's problematic because, you know, the key to the storyline was that this boy in the documentary had to overcome bullying, but that was in 2011. Mm. And times have changed, so it's fine. But as long as we spell out that it is set, it is a decade behind where we are.
So almost any either, like,
which is fine. We watch House of Bernarda Alba, it's set in a different time period, you know, that's fine. Pieces of theatre are set in different time periods, but other people watching it think, your teachers are nasty. Like, I don't know, it gives them a bad rap, I think. And
it depends on the school and the teachers, obviously.
Depends on the teacher, depends on the school, but there are policies and rules in line, and there are regulations and safeguarding and risks. You know, there's ways in which you speak to students, and there's ways in which students should speak to their teachers, but it's, you know, it is make believe. But because it is based on a real life story, it's I don't know, there's like a there's a little bit of grey in there that needs a tweak, I think.
Yeah. Or it's really amplified that it was set in a period of time that isn't today.
Although it's quite hard. Well, yeah.
But I don't know how they do that.
It's quite hard to do. I mean, you do that through costume normally, don't you? But I mean, school uniform is school uniform. It hasn't really changed much.
If the show closed and it opened again in 10 years, then you could do it as a period piece because it would work. Because you go, they're the fashion at the time. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But I guess because it's still quite new and the musical has only been going for 5 years.
So, if it is 2011 or if it is 2018, how has fashion really changed from then to now? It's not huge. It's not like you go, that's 90s or, that's 70s or 80s costume. It's kind of hard to place. It's like, they're not that trendy.
Yeah, I guess so.
Is that how they dress in Sheffield? The London, you know, I don't know. Yeah, it's kind of,
I know what you mean. Yeah.
So, but it was, you know, energy-wise, everything. Lovely, wonderful, a great piece. But just a couple of things for me personally and the other drama teachers. But they loved it. So good.
And that's what it matters. I mean, at the end of the day, a show is there to entertain you. Mm-hmm. It's not necessarily, I mean, if it can, wonderful, but they're not always meant to change your life. They're always not meant to be that kind of,
replicate,
oh my God, I'm
history perfectly.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there's many shows that we can mention that, you know, they're just a bit of fun, you know.
Yeah.
Like Six.
Yeah. That educates you though, don't you? By the end of it, you know, divorced, beheaded,
yeah,
died.
You know that song. Survived. I know. You definitely know from that one, but yeah. But yeah, but I want to say it's a period of history, you know, it's relevant
in
some respects.
And the story is brilliant.
And
the story is about uniqueness and overcoming adversity and, you know, rising above bullying and speaking out against oppressors. So it's you know,
universal.
It's a story, yeah, universal story that will run and run, and inspirational, and a good message for anyone.
Maybe I'll catch it at Sadler's Wells when it comes in there. I actually looked at the programming today at Sadler's, at least up until what they got, I think it's early summer. There's some terrific stuff. I mean, I love dance anyway, so I hope you get to see a bit more and focus a little bit more dance on the podcast. But they do some terrific stuff at Sadler's, even if it's solo performance up until like a couple of weeks, or even a full season. Obviously, the summer they have a whole season of the show. Christmas they do.
Mm.
Obviously, with as
Matthew Bourne.
Yeah, Edward Scissorhands has just obviously finished there.
Mm.
So yeah, definitely Sadler's Wells is one of our champion spaces.
Yes, yes.
Of, again, like I said about Turbine, you know, championing new pieces and under kind of recognised voices and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So we're very lucky to have a space like that.
Mm. So easy to get to as well.
Sadler's.
Yeah,
it's not far from Angel Tube, I guess, is it? Or a little bus up and stuff. But yeah. No, well, London's very accessible. My God, you know, we've got an amazing tube system.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Great place to live.
Well, for now, until floods happen and, you know, global warming, we have no tubes. And then, yeah. Did you know, actually, going back to the Cockbusters, one of the interesting things that you said about your kind of like shows and getting information and stuff and learning new things is the underground we have in London is the oldest in the world. We're the first to put trains underground. The oldest line is the Metropolitan Line. Do you know actually
underground research? Did this all come out of that production?
It's out in the show. which underground station has the longest escalator?
Oh, I don't. The longest escalator? Yes. What, the tremolator bit?
No. As in going up. The deepest kind of like
somewhere is the Jubilee line, Westminster. Nope.
Angel.
Is it?
Yeah.
Most steps got to be Covent Garden.
Probably, yeah. But the other one that come up, they do like a little quiz thing in it. What tube station has a Z in it? I got it straight away. I was like, yes, I'm the king of the tube. Come on, 3, 2, 1.
Pressure, no.
Belsize Park.
Ugh, I would never have got there.
No, that's good. No, it's like quite chunky stuff. I got this. I know. And you see, it's like, oh my God, I know this, you know.
Oh, let's wrap this up.
Well, thank you very much, Natalie. Charming. Well, you went interviewing, didn't you?
I did. I interviewed a friend of mine, an actor, Matt Lockett, and he recently finished doing Polar Express.
Cute.
And he's now rehearsing Sherlock's Excellent Adventure.
Oh.
Yes.
What's that about?
Well,
having an excellent adventure with Sherlock.
Yeah, absolutely. You're going to hear all about it in the interview. Here it is. So I had the opportunity to meet up with an old friend of mine, Matt Lockett, and we met recently on the 48-hour Artist Challenge at the Mayflower Theatre in Southampton.
Yes, we did, yeah.
How are you doing?
I'm very well. Yeah, very well. How are you?
I'm great. I've started the new year with a bang, and it's great to be able to catch up and find out a little bit more about the Polar Express that you were working on at the end of last year. How did it go?
Yeah. It was amazing. Yeah, it might sound a bit cliche, but it really was magical. I think the thing that really kind of made it so magical was seeing. Because with theatre, a lot of the time you don't necessarily get to see how it's affecting people, but with a kind of immersive experience like that, you could see right there in front of you, like all of these kids and how it was really making their Christmas. And I think it was just such a kind of fantastic thing to be a part of. Yeah, really good.
Aww. Well, I mean, my son is 18, so there was no way we were going to come to Swanage to the Polar Express this year.
Oh, yeah.
But part of our Christmas, every Christmas Eve, without fail, we would watch the Polar Express because he believes. and it was just it's always part of our Christmas because it was such a fabulous film. With Tom Hanks playing all those different characters and the different voices. So tell me how you bring something as iconic as the Polar Express animation to, I'd say, the stage, but obviously to this immersive railway, the railway in Swanage, the actual railway.
Yes, yeah, bring it, bring it to the train rather than to the stage, which was a completely kind of new experience. I've never done anything like that. But yeah, kind of bringing that, those characters to life, really kind of thinking about, I think the big part of it really was the movement, obviously with it being an animated film, really kind of studying how those characters were moving, and thinking about that and how you could try to bring that to life. I think that was really important. And obviously the voice as well, with an animated film, that's a crucial part of what makes the character. So really trying to listen into those voices and kind of pick out what made them. Yeah, for me, those were the kind of two fundamental things, I think.
And you played the conductor?
Yes, yes, I played the conductor, which was an amazing experience. And I also did play a couple of different roles as well, depending on cast availability and that kind of thing.
Oh, nice.
Which was, yeah, it was a great experience to be able to do that, because I've never been kind of like a swing, if you will. So doing that, yeah, it was fantastic.
Was it a large cast then?
It was. We had, well, I would say so. We had about 40, maybe 45 cast members, because obviously you've got conductors, you've got chefs, you've got stewards, you've got the King of the North Pole, you've got all sorts of characters. And I believe in future years there may be more to come as well, which is definitely something to look out for. So, yeah, quite a big cast, which was nice. It was nice to be around lots of people. And because of the scheduling, not always the same people. Yeah, a really lovely Christmas experience for everyone, I think.
Aww. And how many shows did he have to do a day? Were there lots of different time slots? How was it kind of scheduled? Because I imagine they wanted to get as many families through the immersive experience as possible. I know, because I've been on like a Paddington Bear one, so I know kind of how the, I mean, I presume it's a similar kind of format.
Yes, so it did vary depending on obviously whether it was term time or not. And the weekend and that kind of thing. But generally speaking, it would be kind of five shows a day. I think the first show is usually around about lunchtime, and then the last show would finish about 8 o'clock at night. And it was literally sort of back-to-back shows. So you kind of finish one show, get everything set and ready for the next show, the train goes out, and then we start all over again. Yeah, just kind of non-stop really, but it was excellent.
Oh, and did the children get hot chocolate?
Yes. Yeah, probably one of the liveliest and most enjoyed numbers, I think, was hot chocolate. You've got people dancing everywhere, you've got hot chocolate, you've got cookies. And just a lot of fun.
Oh, and were there songs then as well? Were you singing?
Yeah. So there was scenes, they were kind of separated out with songs. There was moments as well when there wasn't kind of like the scenes or the songs, there would be just the stewards for each carriage. It would have, that would kind of give them a chance to kind of really interact with the ticket holders, gives them a chance to also do their wish lists, their Christmas wish lists of what they want. Yeah, just so much going on. It's lovely.
And has it been running for a few years, or was this the first year of it?
This was the first year at Swanage, but it has been running kind of all across the country for quite a few years now, I think. I think it possibly started in Seaton, but I may be wrong on that. But this was the first time at Swanage, which made it really exciting, kind of new ground.
Yeah. And the children characters within the production, were they played by adults playing down age, or were they played by children?
No, they were played by children.
Oh, really?
Yes, yeah. So we had our young artists who were all amazing. Massive shouts out to all of them. So, yeah, that was really, I think that really made it, to be honest.
I think so, because I think if it had been adults playing as children, I don't know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes in a touring production, you might see adults playing children. I think in the recent touring production of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, it was, you know, young adults playing the children. Yes, so, yeah. You know, straight out of drama school, that kind of thing. And for me, I don't know, I want to see the children, you know. When I saw The Witches recently at the National Theatre, the children are being played by children, and boy, are they good. And, you know, Matilda, it wouldn't work as well. So I think that's lovely. Where did the children come from? Local?
They were all local, yes, which I think is really nice. I think there was like a few occasions where, you know, with them being children, there wasn't always availability or maybe illness, that kind of thing. So we did have one of our adult cast, Dylan, who's actually 18. So sometimes he would step in as one of the children, which was quite fun. And he did an absolutely fantastic job of it. Especially considering it was sort of like a last minute thing as well. It wasn't a pre-planned kind of contingency.
Yeah. And but did you have any children that you know, i.e., you know, from family that came to see it?
I didn't personally know, but I know a lot of the cast did, and all of the feedback that they were getting was really nice. And it was also a case that we would try to kind of, where we could, make sure that those cast members were in the carriages where their family were, just so they could have that little kind of nice moment with their family, which was always nice.
And were you doing a show on Christmas Eve?
Gosh, I'm just trying to think. There was a show on Christmas Eve. I wasn't working on that one, I don't think. I think it was just Christmas Day and Boxing Day that we had off. And then it was all the way through until the end of the year, so the 31st of December. And yeah, that was it for the Polar Express this year.
Oh, well, that sounds like a wonderful and lovely experience. And then quite different to the next show that you're preparing for. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, very different from my next show. So my next show is Sherlock's Excellent Adventure, which is with Our Star Theatre Company. We haven't started rehearsals for it yet. That will be coming up a little later in the year. But we will be touring from the end of April until July. Obviously, it's based on the character from Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's Sherlock Holmes. But it's a comedy, and it was written by James Barry. It kind of revolves, obviously, around Holmes and Watson, but there is a dispute over a family will, which is this kind of brought them into the story of it. It's full of all of the things you'd expect, really. There's mystery, there's adventure, there's even a little bit of magic.
Oh.
And an absolute ton of laughs. It is funny. I'm very much looking forward to it.
And is this an immersive experience as well?
So this one isn't an immersive experience, not in the same sort of way as the Polar Express, but it is almost like a pantomime at times. It is very much getting the audience to interact, very much breaking the fourth wall. But it is a stage production.
Right. And have you got a good list of places that you're going to?
There is a ton of places, yes. Just trying to think off the top of my head. Because there's so many, I can't necessarily name any, but we're definitely going all the way up to Scotland.
Oh, wow.
All through the south coast as well. All the way down to Cornwall, Wales, the Midlands, really all over the United Kingdom.
Oh, nice. Well, when the production, you know, starts, what did you say, April? Then, so yeah, send me the list of venues, and we can pop it out on the Instagram so that people can come and see it. And what part are you playing?
I'm playing Moriarty.
Oh, lovely.
Yes, yeah. A bad guy for a change.
Yeah.
Nice.
So that's quite a contrast to the conductor in the Polar Express.
Yes, yeah. A very different role is I never really play the bad characters, which I think was probably what drew me to it. Something a bit different, a bit of a challenge. And it's just, when I read the script, it's just really fun.
Nice to play a bad character, I think.
Yes.
Particularly if it's in something where we're breaking the fourth wall. You get, and exactly. If it's got that pantomime feel and you get the boos and the hisses, that'll really spur you on in the performance.
Yeah.
Because I probably would see you more as a Watson, maybe.
Yeah.
So I think that's great.
That would usually be, I think, my casting. But yeah, I think Moriarty will be fun, definitely.
Yeah, and definitely a character that stood out on the TV show, which I got quite into, the Benedict Cumberbatch. And yeah, the Moriarty character. Yeah, really, really interesting. Wow. So rehearsals are yet to start. And what do you like about this character of Moriarty from what you've read and researched? What are you looking forward to most?
Apart from it being obviously something that's quite different to what I've done before, I think it's the wittiness and the way that the character interacts with the audience as well. I just really like it. I think it'll be fun and it'll be something different. And I'm looking forward to it.
Mm. Do you come near London at all? I'm not sure if you mentioned London then in your list.
I'm just trying to think. I don't think we do. I think we sort of steer clear a little bit of London.
Mm-hmm.
But that may change. I think there possibly may be some more dates being added. But at the moment, off the top of my head, I don't think we
do. Oh, well, maybe I have to pop and see it somewhere else then, especially as it's going to hit summer holidays. So that's great. And yes. What do you think will surprise people about this show?
I think, as cliche as it sounds, probably the ending.
Oh, okay.
There's the things that at least myself, when I read through it, I didn't expect. And I think hopefully the audience won't as well. So definitely a lot of mysteries to be figuring out.
Nice. Exciting. And then what advice would you give to maybe young actors or people wanting to enter into the profession?
I think probably the most important piece of advice would be to stay true to yourself, knowing what kind of roles you want to play, going for obviously for those roles that you think will challenge you, but not the roles necessarily which you possibly wouldn't feel comfortable playing. Know your boundaries.
Good. Wonderful. And so I'm looking forward to seeing this at some point. Do send me the details. And it was lovely to catch up with you. And good luck with it, or break a leg, I should say.
Thank you. Yes, thank you so much.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.